This morning, our text is Luke 4, 17 through 19, and we find Jesus reading from the scroll that's handed to him. The prophet Isaiah. And he says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to set free those who are oppressed, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord." This quote, which is at the beginning of his ministry, contains much of the message of the New Testament in a small capsule. Because as we look at Isaiah 60, 1 through 2, the text is from the Old Testament, and Jesus says a number of things here. David, of course, was anointed by the prophet Samuel. He carried a horn of oil with him out to the house of Jesse to anoint David. And that was a token he had been chosen king by God. Jesus is also the son of David and was anointed by the Spirit of the Lord. There's no need of oil. He's a king, but he's much more. Because what king can give recovery of sight to the blind? A king can proclaim release to the captives. But if you look around the world today, the very nature of kings or rulers is to make captives rather than release them. A king could set free those who are oppressed, but once again, if you look around the world, kings generally are oppressing the people rather than freeing them from oppression. What king can proclaim the favorable year of the Lord? Jesus was all these things. He was anointed to do these things. So he's announcing virtually to someone that understands the scriptures that he is the Messiah. Nobody else could do those things. He's telling the people, "I'm the one." Now, I want to tie this scripture in with Matthew 1:21, and it says, "She will bear a son," the angel is talking to Joseph here, "and you shall call his name Jesus, for it is he who will save his people from their sins." Now, our word Jesus is something of a transliteration from the Greek. The letter J didn't exist in Hebrew, Aramaic, or in fact, English either, until sometime around the 1400s. And so what the angel said was Yeshua. None of his contemporaries ever called him Jesus because the sound of the letter J did not exist. And so this means Jehoshua, or if we use the letter J, Joshua. And the meaning of the name is the Lord is salvation, or Yahweh is salvation. Some people prefer Jehovah, but once again, there was no letter J at the time. And so, this is the message before the birth of Christ. Yahweh is deliverance, or Yahweh is salvation, depending on how you translate that particular word. And so, this is not the message that a king is coming to set up a secular kingdom and restore the throne of David. That's what the people thought way back when they wanted Saul to be king. "We want a king. We want to be like everybody else. We want to be like other nations around us." But rather, the Lord is salvation. And so, it's very easy to see that the name of this child had messianic meaning. The gospel was preached to the poor. Where are poor people? The answer is everywhere. They're mostly neglected by those with power or money, often despised, and kind of shunted aside. Go starve quietly. Don't bother me. Our political class likes to get the votes of poor people in the election cycle. But cycle after cycle, people are still poor. People are still neglected. Most of our politicians, like the politicians of the day, are elitist and are concerned with their own power, their own prestige, their own importance. That is essentially their religion. I am important. Look at me. And so, those in the first century had no particular interest in reaching out to the poor people and sinful people. They avoided them. And they did not understand why Jesus would associate. He goes and eats with publicans and sinners. What kind of man is this? Obviously low class. And many of the issues between Christ and the religious leaders centered around various acts of compassion. He was helping the unfortunate. So you get the woman that was all bowed over, and he straightened her up in the synagogue. They said, "Why did you do that?" He said, "You let go of your donkey every Sabbath to go get a drink of water. Why shouldn't I let this woman go from this infirmity that's bound her? What, your donkey's more important than this lady?" I don't think so. They considered the fact that he ate with publicans and sinners to be a flaw in his character. They held themselves aloof from such people. They didn't understand why he would let a woman of notorious character touch him when she was wiping his feet. That's in Luke 7:37. And when he told them, he came to call the sinners rather than the righteous, they didn't really accept that. He gave them the parable of the lost sheep. He gave them the parable of the lost coin. He gave them the parable of the prodigal son. All making the same point. That which is lost needs to be found. That which has strayed needs to be brought back. There are still things that we can save. We should do that. He came to proclaim release to the captives. Now, slavery has been ended in the United States, although it exists still in other parts of the world. They like to call it something else. No one says I own a slave, but it still exists. In America, there's other sorts of captivity. Sin holds many people captive. Jesus said, if you practice sin, you're the slave of sin. People languish in jail, and their families suffer. There's captives of human philosophy or false doctrines. Did you ever feel sorry for people in a white shirt and tie going up and down the street door to door? You can't see the chains, but they're bound nonetheless by false doctrine. They can't get out. Or what about the humanist who says, oh, people are going to perfect everything. People are going to make a heaven on earth. People have the spark of goodness in them that's going to make everything good. I don't think those people ever watch the news to see what's going on. Legions of people are captive to substances, alcohol, tobacco, drugs, or practices like gambling. If you drive down the road and see someone standing out in the freezing cold, puffing on a cigarette, Master Tobacco told him, go out of the nice warm workplace, stand outside to smoke, because they probably live in a work in a tobacco-free environment. You know, for the sake of their coworkers, the employer says, you can't smoke in here. Their change can't be seen. Can't be seen. They're not visible. They're still bound. Jesus had compassion. He saw these people as sheep without a shepherd. He said, the hireling flees when the wolf comes, but the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. How many of our leaders today, state, federal, or whatever, would lay down their lives for the people they represent? Or would they flee like the hireling? Jesus saw that people needed to be led in the right way. They needed effective leadership, someone to lead them down the narrow way. And they weren't getting it. They weren't getting it. Freedom is an interesting concept. It means different things to different people. So if we go back to the parable of the prodigal son, he wanted to be free. He didn't want the strictures or rules of his father's house. He wanted to run out and do whatever he pleased. But freedom turned out to be very cruel to him. Leadership of Israel wanted freedom from Rome. They wanted to go their own way. But they weren't interested in spiritual freedom. Now, in the various letters to the churches, Paul says to obey the leadership that's in place at the time. And Jesus was very interested in spiritual issues. Okay? And those things can flourish no matter the state of the government. Now, a friendly government makes things easier. But nonetheless, spiritual things can and do flourish all over the world. You got oppression in China, but you got the China House Church, which is huge. Millions of people. The leaders of Israel never even stopped to consider that the common people might need freedom from them. What, you got 50 more rules that I got to obey? I can't even understand this. I can't read or write. How can you tell me to do all these things? How come I have to pay these various taxes, but yet the priests are exempt? To this day in Israel, to this day, the Haredi, the class which kind of inherited the hat of the Pharisees, they don't do compulsory military service. Everybody else does. They don't. Most of them don't work. They live off some kind of welfare that they get. They study. And that's what they consider to be their part in the nation. So, if we look at John 8, 31 through 47, Jesus is telling the Jews that believed in him, if you continue in my word, you'll be disciples, and they'll know the truth will set them free. Well, they respond, hey, we're sons of Abraham. We're not slaves to anybody. We're already free. You can't give us anything we don't already have. And Jesus said, anyone who commits sin or lives in sin is the slave of sin. Okay? And the slave does not remain in the house forever, but the son does remain forever. If the son makes you free, you'll be free indeed. His hearers consider themselves what? Quite good enough. I'm as good as anybody. I'm as good as you. They apparently never read the part where it said there is none good, no, not one. In this way, they were captive of their own doctrine. They were captive of their own beliefs. They were on the road to destruction. And so, if somebody is practicing sin, they're really the slave of sin. Just take one example. Every once in a while, you read the paper, there was an audit, somebody's been embezzling. And over a period of time, they got $20,000, $30,000, whatever it is, but it turned up. Now, that person has been a slave all that time. They took the money, they spent the money, they probably enjoyed the money, but what are they waiting for? They're waiting for the phone call. They're waiting for the knock on the door. My pal, I work very closely with an ex-member from here, Joe Wenger, who was in the FBI, and he did some of those cases where over a period of time somebody took money, but eventually comes a knock on the door, and then you're in a lot of trouble. Well, think of the dread. Think of the sleepless nights. Think of the worry. Because I did this, and sometime it might come out. Could you not truthfully say that person was a slave to sin? I think you can. Well, what then do we need to do? We preach the gospel to the poor. You don't have to have money to come here. Those who are blind to the truth need to be able to see it. Those oppressed by sin need to be able to be free. That's what we're all about, to enable somebody to see clearly. Now, this is the love that's supposed to mark our churches and our ministry. Soon we're going to face another year. I can't say that I see the end of 2020 with deep regret, quite honestly. In many ways, it's been a tough year. But we need to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. Why? Because today is the acceptable day of salvation. Today is the day, because tomorrow is in no way guaranteed. You don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. The church started at Pentecost, and we're in the church age. But the next feast is trumpets, when the trumpet was blown and there was a great assembly and everyone gathered. And we know that the trump is going to sound. And at that point in time, then everything's going to change. Most of us have already seen a favorable year of the Lord when we became saved and accepted Christ as the Messiah. All things changed for us then. We became children of God with a promise that we know the truth, and that truth will make us free. So let's celebrate this freedom with joy. Enjoy this season. We never know if we'll see another. That's a fact. And so, while we celebrate with joy, let us never forget compassion for those less fortunate. never forget a compassion for those held captive, whether by sin, whether literally captive in the jail, whether captive of false doctrine, humanism, whatever they're captive of. So if somebody is insulting to you and thinks your faith is foolishness, don't feel anger. Feel compassion. For they are captives, and they are firmly set on the road to destruction. They're blind. They can't see what you see. They don't know what you know. And so we remember those less fortunate in this time of year. We'll have our closing hymn now.